I want to recognize one of our sponsors. Have you ever felt like a lone wolf in life, unable to engage in chats around the barbecue since you're doing things that aren't the norm? Enter GoBundance, a place where driven entrepreneurs, CEOs, or investors who are beginning to experience an interesting phenomenon with more success in life, the feeling of a gap forming between ourselves and many of the people around us. One day, we wake up and find ourselves surrounded by people who may no longer see the world the same way we do. As the trend continues, we become more isolated and even find ourselves holding back from talking about things we are most excited about with friends, family, or coworkers. GoBundance was created for those who choose to live bigger and more fulfilled lives of impact. This tribe is for men and women who want to experience world-class adventure, bucket list trips, high-minded conversations, authentic relationships, and an environment to learn and grow with like-minded people. GoBundance is a tribe where you are able to share your successes, struggles, ambitions, and failures without being judged. It's a framework to strengthen your journey in becoming a better man, husband, father, friend, and entrepreneur. It is the place men come together to live epic lives and to grab life big. If you want to learn more, go to GoBundance.com and hit the apply button to join the tribe and tell them the Cashflow Ninja sent you. Welcome to the Cashflow Ninja, the podcast sharing how to create and grow income streams and manage, multiply, and protect your wealth in the new economy. Are you tired of trading your time for money? Do you desire freedom today instead of retirement in 10, 20, or 30 years? I'm MC Lobsher, and this is the Cashflow Ninja. This is Cashflow Ninja. I'm MC Lobsher. Thank you so much for joining me on another episode of the Cashflow Ninja podcast and spending your most valuable resource, your time, once again with me on the show. Again, everything in the Cashflow Ninja universe is at cashflowninja.com. Cashflowninja.com. We have over 850 episodes, tools, resources, programs, and also you can grab a copy of my new book, The 21 Best Cashflow Niches, Creating Wealth in the Best Alternative Cash Flow Investments at CashflowNinja.com or on Amazon. And when you do, please screenshot a proof of your purchase, send it to my team at info@CashflowNinja.com, and we will give you access to the digital version of the book, the audio version of the book, a curated library of Cashflow Ninjas talking about the niches, and more bonus goodies. I'm super excited for today's guest. I'm joined by Vasu Kakarlapudi in today's guest. We're going to get into real estate and talk about real estate. He's got a very interesting background, a medical background, and he's going to share how he transitioned from his medical background into real estate and became financially free. And now he still works in the medical field a couple of days a week, not because he has to, but because he loves what he was doing. So I really think this episode would resonate with a lot of people in our audience. And I am super excited to jump into today's episode. Vasit, thank you so much for coming onto the show.
Pleasure to be here, MC.
Now, for my listeners not familiar with you and what you do, could you please share a little bit about your background and journey with them?
Yeah. So my name is Vasu Kakarlapudi. I immigrant family from India, grew up in Midwest in Kansas City. And like a lot of kids growing up in the late 80s, I wanted to be a professional baseball player and quickly realized in high school that my talent wasn't going to support my dream. So I traded in my textbooks for traded in my bat and glove for textbooks. And like a lot of other brown kids who did good in school, I naturally gravitated towards medicine and was fortunate to get into an accelerated program at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. And there I kind of really fell in love with the intricate nature and delicate, meticulous type of anatomy that ear, nose, and throat surgery does. So I finished my training at the University of Maryland in Baltimore. And so then afterward, my wife and I relocated to the Louisville, Kentucky area. And my wife's a dentist. And so we quickly realized that, you know, a larger paycheck certainly doesn't create any freedom, but cash flow sure does. And so kind of looked around, saw a lot of negativity in medicine with a lot of negative secular trends with declining reimbursements and control from insurance companies, et cetera, et cetera. And so I kind of sought out people that were happy. And at the end of the day, we're all just trying to be happy, right, MC? So, yep. You know, the people that were happy are the ones that had cash flow. And therefore kind of looked and see what the, you know, studied what they did, and they really, invested in assets that generated cash flow, and real estate being one of them. So, slowly but surely I was able to, invest some of the proceeds from our, income, practice income, and into real estate and other hard assets, and, solved another pain point of taxes, because as a W-2, or a self-employed person, you know, you've talked about this a lot. You know, it's not tax advantaged income. And so our largest expenses were taxes, and we were going well into April and May every year, paying Uncle Sam. And, so there was less left for us. So, found real estate and had been investing in real estate for 16 years. And, fast forward to today, I, practice medicine on my own terms because, you know, passive income far exceeds our monthly expenses. And so I feel like I'm free and take better care of my patients than I ever have before, because I don't need to, and I'm doing it because I love it and not for any other reason. And so our passion moving forward is to really kind of share some of our experiences and shorten that learning curve for others, because a lot of people helped me along the way. I had a lot of nice mentors and real estate experts that really took me under their wing. And so our job now is to kind of pay that forward and provide some contribution to my peers.
Talk to me about the transition period from getting into real estate, because we have a lot of folks in our audience that is in the medical field, and they're listening to this probably going to like, oh, like, well, how do I start? Where do I start? Because I'm looking to do the same thing too. I've had a ton of conversations with folks in the medical field that are looking to do exactly that. So what was that like, the transition and kind of taking those first steps?
Well, I mean, one thing I really knew is the educational process through medical school and residency. It's all about, you know, getting an education, a basic education, and then going out there, implementing it and finding people who can help you. And that's really what I did. As I read all the books that you and your other panelists have talked about in the past, and got my basic knowledge and terminology in what the different basics of real estate, and then really tried to put my name out there and networked with people. Ironically, a lot of them were my patients. I found out a lot of my patients were involved in real estate. So, you know, I was young and, you know, humble and energetic, and those kinds of people love those kinds of people. So those people who are experts love helping people if you possess some of those attributes. And so really it just starts with education, basics of terminology, and asking the right questions, finding mentors. And then ultimately, you know, knowledge without action is insane, right? So you gotta put one foot forward and take some action. Start small. You may fail, but pick yourself up and dust off those battle scars and move on to the next project. And so it's just really one step at a time. I wish there was a magic bullet, but it's about priorities, right, MC? So whatever you put your mind to, you know, most of my peers are highly educated, very intelligent, hardworking people. And, you know, ear, nose, and throat surgery is more complex than real estate. So, you know, if you can do delicate surgery, you can certainly put your foot in the game in real estate and do well.
So when you took action, was it locally that you started investing in the market that you lived in? Or was it sort of looking for operators and markets that were attractive to you initially? What did that look like?
You know, initially, most of my mentors were local in southern Indiana, greater Louisville area. And so really started with single family homes and townhomes in that area and then scaled from there. But, you know, it's good, I think, when you're first starting to maybe pick if you want to be active. There's certainly passive routes of cash flow as well, but I did a little bit of both. So the active portfolio was certainly within my geographic area. But my passive portfolio was, you know, across the country.
Talk to me a little bit about the decision between active and passive. And it seems like you had a little bit of a hybrid at some stage too, because that's another question that a lot of folks might have, because, you know, obviously they look at this and go, well, I'm working, you know, 10 plus hours a day in the hospital or at a practice. I don't necessarily want to start another job that requires my input. Talk to me a little bit about your decision in active versus passive, and was there a hybrid at stage, and what does it look like the majority of it?
I want to take a moment to recognize one of our sponsors, Producers Wealth. If you're interested to set up your infinite banking policy correctly and have access to a coach that will help you use your infinite banking strategy to grow your business and your investment portfolio, and having your capital work in more than one place simultaneously, and protect your capital from market downturns, taxes, predators, and creditors, you can watch a presentation of exactly how you can do this at yourownbankingsystem.com. That's yourownbankingsystem.com.
Yeah, I mean, I only wanted to be involved in active real estate if I could be as good as anybody else out there. I wanted to be world class at it. So if you invest, if your audience kind of invest the time and energy to become a domain expert in whatever asset class or in whatever geography they want to participate in an active basis, I think that's a good basis in which to start an active real estate career, investing career. For folks that want to not spend all that time and energy and get all those get that domain expertise in this particular asset class, and they want to leverage the skill set and the time of others, I suggest a passive approach for that. So that's kind of what I do. Is in markets where I know I'm as good as anybody else out there, I participate actively. And for diversification, I want to be, you know, insulated as much as possible and have as many non-correlated assets in my portfolio as I can. You know, for those areas that I'm not the expert in, I certainly would you know, err toward the side of being more passive.
Gotcha. And then right now, so you're obviously active in a lot of properties, right? Because that's what you enjoy doing, and you're in a position where you can do what you enjoy doing, which is the goal for everyone. So you're actively involved as an investor, and then you also work still some days in the medical profession because you enjoy doing that too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do it on my own terms. And, you know, I don't need it to pay my monthly bills and support my family. But, you know, I do it because I love it. And so I'm trying to, you know, find that that balance, essentially, of, you know, doing what you love to do. It doesn't become work, and managing that with, you know, family time and hobbies and taking care of your body and exercise and meditation and all the other things that you know, many of your guests have talked about. It's all about finding balance. So for me, I found what works for me is, you know, practicing medicine and ear, nose, and throat surgery some of the days, and practicing real estate the other days. So it's a good balance.
And this is really just, you know, this has just increased the effectiveness of all the areas of your life, right? The money took care of family life, plus your career, plus a better, you know, the patients are getting better served, and so forth. So it's all come full circle for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I found, you know, as we were talking off air, is I beta test on myself, and I've realized that while my, you know, I can provide a lot more empathetic, patient-centered care, because I don't have to stress about the paycheck that comes along with it. And so, you know, while, you know, the scientific skills and the technical aspects have always been there, some of the more softer aspects of connecting and providing empathetic, compassionate care, I've got a lot more freedom to be able to do that. And that's my real wish for my peers, is to be able to practice medicine on their own terms if they want to. Or I know a lot of people don't like medicine that are in medicine. Those kind of folks should probably figure out a way to use cash flow to get out of medicine. I think the vast majority of people, you know, with passive income and cash flow from alternative sources, can get back to the reasons why they got into medicine to begin with. You know, we were like a young baby who's naive and you know, has bright eyes and bushy tail. you know, you come into medicine with all these great aspirations, and then the harsh reality of all the trials and tribulations and pain points in practicing medicine become up front and center. And I really feel like cash flow and passive income allow you to be able to get back to the roots of why you went into medicine to begin with. And ultimately, that leads to better patient care. I mean, I want any doctor that works on me to be financially independent and do practicing on me because they love what they do and not because of the money I'm paying them.
Yeah, they can absolutely serve at a higher purpose at that stage.
Yeah, absolutely. It's Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right?
Exactly. So from a philosophical standpoint or just from a framework, what is your wealth and income strategy? Maybe this will sharing this will help some of the some of our listeners and some of our viewers.
Yeah, I mean, I think you've talked about it in a lot of your episodes, MC. I've learned a lot from listening to you over the years. And I think, you know, you need to have a certain bucket that is very, very rock solid, safe, consistent cash flow in all economic cycles. And then, you know, you've got some areas for, you know, cash, you've got some areas that you want to grow, and some areas where you can swing for the fences and get into a little bit of venture capital and, you know, maybe one in 10 of those hits, but it could be a, you know, 30, 40, 50X return on your money. But I would go through that in that sequence. I mean, I think the first area that you have to be able to master before you jump into step two is get enough cash flow to meet your monthly, you know, burn rate. And then once you've exceeded that, then you can get into more of the growth oriented investment and venture capital investment down the road.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk real estate for a little bit. Markets that you're interested these days. What are some of the markets that interest you and that you're actively involved in or looking at, and why? What attracts you about them?
Yeah, actually, so, you know, I told you I live in Louisville. I'm actually in Dallas right now on a surprise trip that we just got awarded a deal in Northeast Dallas. So we're here at I'm actually in an apartment complex rental office right now doing this podcast. So I love the DFW area. It's got great diversified job growth. I mean, you basically follow the people. The way I kind of look at it is, you know, You know, we do a lot of stuff in multifamily. So multifamily is really most profitable in areas where there are jobs. So where, you know, you go, you follow where the jobs are. And we like a lot of the Texas markets. So the Dallas, Fort Worth, Austin, Houston, San Antonio, also the Carolinas, North and South Carolina, and the Atlanta markets. So I mean, these are popular markets for a reason. I know a lot of people are chasing these markets, but they're really following demographic trends because, you know, rising tide raises all ships. And these are economically diverse markets that have, you know, really positive net domestic migration. The people within the country are moving there. Companies are moving here. They're landlord friendly. They're business friendly, and great climates. So you don't have to reinvent the wheel in real estate. You can really kind of study demographic trends, which are 30, 40, 50 year trends, and limit your volatility to economic cycles in that way.
It's been very interesting because there were trends in motion prior to 2020, right? And migration patterns were in place. I mean, everybody talked about the Great Migration, essentially, where right. There was a lot of folks moving to Texas. And I mean, the markets in Texas, whether it be Dallas and San Antonio and Houston, which has been a pretty hot market, and Austin and so forth. And then Florida, obviously, is a place where a lot of folks have moved to. Arizona. The Sun Belt states have really benefited from that Great Migration. And it seems like that just absolutely been amplified of the events of 2020.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, MC. I mean, you know, the kind of so-called black swan event basically accelerated existing trends and fast forwarded everything, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 years. And you've seen that, right? I mean, in the last couple of years with, you know, rent growth in these areas, it's just been phenomenal. We're getting, you know, rent growth projections that we had for 5, 6 years from now today. You know, you've seen cap rate compression, you've seen a lot more competition in this area. So It's really, really fascinating how, you know, what we thought that when the world was going to come to an end, you know, to a little bit over 2 years ago, it's, you know, we're on the other side of this, and we've seen a whole different landscape to the, in all areas of real estate, but especially in multifamily in the last 2 years.
I want to take a moment to recognize one of our sponsors. One of the best cash flow niches might surprise you. It's the cash flow machine called Resort Hospitality. Our friends and partners, Melanie and Josh McCallan from Accountable Equity, are so prolific at creating cash flow for their investors that I had to include them twice in my book, The 21 Best Cash Flow Niches. Something that really impresses me about this dynamic group is that more than just creating cash flow with these historic trophy resort properties, they are also creating a powerful investor community with an Accountable Equity. Investors not only get to enjoy cash flow from beautiful resorts, but can enjoy the resorts and attend Learn and Grow investor summits where like-minded accredited investors gather to learn from keynote speakers, as well as get updates on their projects and meet the growing team that makes all of this possible. You can learn more how the asset class of resort hospitality is a great way to diversify your multifamily investments by downloading the ebook, The 10 Steps to Build Wealth with Resort Hospitality Assets, at accountableequity.com. What are some other trends that's caught your eye in real estate, and more specifically multifamily?
Well, I think it's the garden style, low density product that is really advantageous for this work from home. You've got a significant portion of the population that COVID has proved that can work remotely, right? And so we're seeing a lot of trends where people want that extra bedroom that they use for like a home office. They don't necessarily want to be tied down in a big urban high-rise building, but they prefer some of the garden style, low density, suburban and communities where they still have access to all of the big city amenities, but they've got their own space. You know, social distancing is kind of built in. So that kind of garden style, suburban, B grade to A minus grade assets in high growth markets is just, it's been a fantastic sandbox to play in.
What are some of the technology trends and maybe some of the technologies that you've seen in multifamily also since 2020? There's been some of them rolled out, correct, in this new world?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think in terms of from an investment standpoint, we're getting a lot of real live data in terms of AI software in rental rates. So we can, you know, use some of this software to get real time data in terms of what the comps are in this area, because this, you know, the stuff is changing so rapidly. And so real-time data is becoming super, super important. We're getting, you know, a lot more. So in terms of rent growth, using AI analytics to help us optimize that for our investors. And then, you know, in terms of amenities for tenants, you know, a lot of dog parks and more communal facilities, package storing with the e-commerce revolution. So we're seeing a lot of cool things like that. Solar is also becoming a big deal now. So there's with the federal tax credit with solar as a landlord, you're incentivized to be able to kind of start some of those processes and create some economies of scale and cost savings for everybody.
Are there still folks doing virtual showings and so forth? It was so interesting to see this all happening. And I'm like, this might be like part of just the world moving forward, right? Because it's effective, it's efficient. You could show it the property pretty quickly to tenants that you're renting to, right?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Virtual showings were definitely a thing that COVID brought on. I think that's slowly starting to phase out, though. I think people are still, we're social creatures by nature. So I think people want to start actually visiting the property. So it'll be interesting. I think that'll always be an option that COVID allowed us to use. But I don't know that it's going to become, you know, mainstream. I think people want to generally see the product and the place that they're going to live. But we've seen that in the residential market, obviously, in really hot residential markets, virtual showings, and you're getting offers without sight unseen. So it certainly happened. It's crazy.
Yeah, I'd love to get your take on what you're seeing right there, too. I mean, it's been pretty crazy. You have almost no inventory still. Yeah. And I mean, we're getting properties, I mean, go on the market. They get bought sight unseen, not even a showing, maybe a virtual showing over asking price. Yeah. It's kind of crazy. And of course, all markets are different. But this is happening in a lot of markets across the country, right?
Right, absolutely. It's not just the Sun Belt. We talked about the Sun Belt, but you look at all these mountain states, you know, Idaho and Arizona and Utah and Nevada. I mean, people are moving there in droves, leaving some of the high tax burden and regulated states like California. And I don't see that slowing down. So I think you've got to be very disciplined in as an investor. I heard one of your guests, Mark Moss, had said, you know, investing is like being a gladiator. You're just trying to avoid getting killed. And I heard him say that. I was like, wow, that is so true. You've got to be very careful in your underwriting and your assumptions. We talked about cash is trash, but you need to hang on to some cash and not be overly levered. And so I think this market requires a lot of discipline, MC, to really make sure that you've got the fundamentals down and that you're equipped to, because everything is cyclical, right? So, I mean, you know, even when you have good positive demographic tailwinds, there are going to be some bumps along the road, even in multifamily, which has a lot of good, strong tailwinds. So you've got to be able to weather the storm and play the long game, I believe. So if you are banking on, 15, 20% rent growth for the next 5 years and planning on an exit cap rate of 3.5, because that's what you're buying in right now at, you may be in for a rude awakening. So I think it's important to be not overly levered, stress test your underwrites with various people. I mean, we do that. We have, our lender stress test, or our property manager stress test. We do our own performance. We stress test all of that. We compare notes. And so I think that kind of discipline is super, super important. I really kind of, borrow a lot of the same principles from ENT surgery and brought them into real estate. And I think that they've served me well, because, most ENT surgeons are extremely risk averse given the kind of the delicate anatomy that we operate around with the brain and the eye and smell centers and all that kind of stuff. So use some of those same principles in real estate investing, and so to keep you from getting caught naked when the tide recedes.
Yeah, very interesting stuff. What are some of the headwinds that you see in multifamily? And maybe you could speak to interest rates. You mentioned cap rates. And of course, there's different headwinds for different segments, right? For your A class, your B class, and your C class. But what are some of the headwinds that you see and risks that need to be managed?
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit a lot of them. Interest rates, interest rate risk is huge. Now, whether you believe the Fed is going to continue to be able to raise rates when the United States is the largest debtor out there, I mean, I have my doubts about that, but at least transitory from a short-term perspective, rates are definitely going up. So that does increase your debt service. And a lot of the lenders now are asking you to be less levered to increase their security, and they're raising their, DSCR requirements. And so it becomes harder to find yield when you have rising debt service coverage and cap rates haven't moved that much. So you're being, you really have to be very, very careful in how you underwrite and have, relationships with key people to be able to get access to deals. Some of the other headwinds, I think, is as a lot of people on your show have talked about, is there's definitely an affordability issue. We have a general rule of thumb that, your monthly income has to be 3x your rental payment. And so, we're seeing now that rental income, rent growth is going faster than income growth. And so at some point that's going to cross. And there's already an affordability crisis as there is right now. So I think, I just don't think we're going to see this kind of rent growth. It's just not going to, it's not plausible. Mathematically, it's not plausible. Right now, there's such a huge supply-demand imbalance. But, you know, like any other free market, you know, that supply demand imbalance will eventually shrink. Now, fortunately for multifamily investors, I think we've got at least, you know, 10 years left before that imbalance kind of significantly narrows. But, you know, you always have to, you know, check your backside. You know, I mean, you got to make sure you're not exposed. So I think those are some of the immediate headwinds that come to my mind at this point.
Yeah, we definitely live in interesting times. Your take on, you know, just the economy in general, because obviously real estate plays a big role in that. I want to take a moment to recognize one of our sponsors. My friend Dave Zook says, you can be conventional or you can be wealthy. Pick one. At The Real Asset Investor, Dave and his team bring their investors high yield investment opportunities across several asset classes for cash flow, tax impact, and equity growth. He and his team are one of the top 5 ATM operators in the country, and they have an investment opportunity available to accredited investors right now in the ATM space. To learn more about their ATM funds that produce tax-free cash flow, visit therealassetinvestor.com.
Yeah. I mean, I am a, you know, again, an ear, nose, and throat surgeon by training, but I love economics, and I listen to a lot of people that are much smarter than me. I try to be the least smart guy in the room at any given time, and fortunately, there's a lot of very talented, intelligent people that I listen to. And the consensus that I've kind of come up with is just from listening to all different kind of viewpoints is, yes, there are some significant amount of tailwinds for the U.S. economy because we're really you know, the best of the worst, so to speak. There's people still want to come to America. You know, I know you emigrated here from South Africa, and yep. You know, my family emigrated from India. There's still guys like you and me from all over the world that still want to come to America, and I think that's one of the key advantages that the U.S. economy has. And while the U.S. dollar has been debased significantly, you know, it's still, in terms of a fiat currency, it's the most respected fiat currency. So, you've talked a little bit about crypto and how that might change, and Bitcoin might change that in the future. But for right now, I mean, I think those are the things that are really working in the United States' favor. It's a diversified economy. We believe in entrepreneurship and creating jobs. People from all over the world want to still invest here, and the people still want to move here. And the U.S. dollar is still the most respected fiat currency there is. So those are all the things that I see in the positive side. On the negative side, obviously, you know, it'll be really interesting to see how long can we continue to print money, and do we as a society pay some of that debt down, or do we just inflate it away, or do we just default? You know, it's going to be really interesting. I don't have an answer to that. I'd love to hear your perspective on that. What do you think, MC?
No, it's very interesting how it's playing out, because I also follow folks with completely different and opposite views and different investment hypotheses. And one of the things that has been very interesting is the Brent Johnson dollar milkshake theory, where he eventually said that because all of the different countries and their central banks around the world increased all of their currency supply. And, you know, usually you have pretty much the same goods and services, or maybe even a little bit more in those countries. This time you had fewer goods and services, much more currencies. But the hypothesis basically comes down to there is still a demand for the dollar. So even though all these countries have inflated through their central banks, their currency supplies, other countries still have to hold U.S. dollar reserves because it's still the world reserve currency.
Right.
Where there's no necessarily demand for, you know, South African rands or Brazilian real or and so forth. So those countries, their currencies are starting to weaken considerably against the U.S. dollar. And the U.S. dollar index is actually spiking, as he was sharing in his hypothesis, that would be the case before most of these currencies would then go down. The dollar would first go up and strengthen versus all the other currencies out there. And then eventually something, you know, something else will happen. But it's been fascinating to see this play out. It's been fascinating, and nobody has a crystal ball, right? So you have to prepare for anything and everything, essentially, because you do hear the one side that the dollar's going to crash, but then it becomes the question: if you just take a step back, against what?
Yeah,
it's all relative. What?
Right.
You know, against what is it going to crash? Other currencies, commodities, cryptocurrencies. I mean, the argument could be made that it already did against some commodities. Right. It's almost like a price reset more than just inflation and some cryptocurrencies. But against other currencies, no, not necessarily. I know it's all fiat currencies, but that's still the medium of exchange, right? So it's fascinating. It's fascinating to see how this plays out. You know, and that's why at a time like this, when there's a lot of uncertainty, when there is, disruptions, I mean, we're just going from one disruption and crisis to another one, I feel like, when there's so much change happening and so quickly, and when there's so much chaos globally, hard assets is a good place to have in your portfolio.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially income producing hard assets. That's the real attraction of real estate is there's so many different ways that you can make money in real estate. And if you're a long-term holder and you're disciplined, not overly levered, you can continue to do well in various economic cycles.
Absolutely. I'm always interested to learn what wealthy and just incredibly successful folks are learning. What are they studying? So what are you currently studying and what are you learning?
Well, I've been focusing a lot on mindset. I've read two of Dan Sullivan's book with Benjamin Hardy, both Who Not How and The Gap and the Gain. So the first one is really about, who, not how. I'm sure you probably have heard about that, if not read it, but, it's a great book about, leveraging people around you, to help you find solutions to problems. And you can also help other people do the same thing. So it's kind of a circle where everyone helps each other in a different way. So I found that book fascinating. And then The Gap and the Gain is another fantastic book about, the premise of that book essentially is that if you focus on the horizon, you're setting yourself up for disappointment because the horizon always moves. But if you measure yourself against what you've already accomplished and you focus on that first, paradoxically, you actually can achieve your intended outcomes better. And part of what that book asks you to do is to write down at the end of the day three things that you are extremely grateful for and three things that you're looking forward to tomorrow. And so for the last 4 or 5 months, I've been keeping that journal, and it's really helped me become more productive and get better night's sleep, actually, because you're focused on what you're going to be doing the next day. And you're grateful for what you've accomplished and the wins that you've had in the day preceding.
Yeah, it's very powerful stuff. And I love Dan Sullivan. Obviously, I've been a strategic coach client and being part of that community. So he's got some great stuff. And those were two of his best frameworks that he shares in that community. So I was excited when he rolled out those two books. I mean, it's incredible. It's just a different way of looking at shifting your perspective.
Yeah. I really think those two books are going to become like the Rich Dad, Poor Dad and Cash Flow Quadrant of 20 years ago.
Yeah, they very well could be. And those are fantastic books too, The Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And The Cash Flow Quadrant was phenomenal. That was actually even Robert's best book right there, because that actually is the blueprint from going from the left side of the quadrant, which is the employee and the self-employed, to the right side, which is the business owner and the investor, right?
And I think, one of the classics that, you got to go back and read every couple of years is Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill as well. That's another one that they're timeless lessons,
Absolutely. So one of the things that we talk about on the show, we talk about obviously cash flow, we talk about business and investing and so forth, but we also talk about principles, values, leaving a legacy. So I always ask folks the first time they come on, if you cannot leave any money to future generations and you are only allowed to hand down three principles and values to them to build wealth and achieve happiness and success, what would they be?
Well, I think, find your passion. And I don't know if I'm answering your question correctly or not, but basically finding your passion, what is it that you've been put on this earth to do? And really, once you develop enough and you've taken care of your basic needs, and you've taken care of your family, you set your family up for success, how are you going to contribute back to society? And so, you know, everyone's got to find whatever passion that they have to be able to contribute through their capital or through their time or a combination of both. So it's really about, you know, I've heard the old adage, the first half of your life is about significance and the second half of your life is about contribution. And so I think that's something that once people have enough cash flow to be able to meet their needs, hopefully they can dig deep and become, you know, passionate about how they can contribute back to society.
Awesome. This has been great. Where can my listeners and viewers learn more about you? Where can they follow you? And where can they stay informed of all the many projects that that you're involved with?
Yeah. So our entity is APTA Properties. APTA in the ancient Sanskrit language of India is an acronym for trust. And so really, you know, most of our investors are people that I've known for most of my life, my partners in my practice, my family, friends and family and their referrals and so forth. So that's really what we're all about in providing opportunities, passive income opportunities for busy physicians and surgeons and other healthcare professionals, other business owners. You know, surgeons are an avatar for high income people who have a lot of time constraints. So APTA Properties is our website and certainly could email us at info@aptaproperties.com and be happy to share with you our latest ebook on Surgeon's Guide to Freedom.
Fantastic. Well, this has been a blast having you on, Vasu. Thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your journey and your knowledge and providing so much value for all of my listeners and viewers out there.
Yeah, thank you, MC, for all of what you do. You give back to the Cashflow Ninja community in so many ways, and I honor and respect you for what you've been doing and sharing that message that needs to be heard loud and clear by all the rest of society as well.
Thank you so much to all of the listeners and viewers for spending the most valuable resource, your time, once again with me on the show. Everything Cashflow Ninja is at cashflowninja.com. And don't forget to grab a copy of my book, The 21 Best Cashflow Niches, Creating Wealth in the Best Alternative Cashflow Investments, available at cashflowninja.com or on amazon.com. When you grab a copy, please screenshot a proof of your purchase. Send it to my team at info@cashflowninja.com and we'll give you access to the bonus goodies, which includes a digital version of the book, an audio version of the book, a curated library of interviews of Cashflow Ninjas talking about the niches and more. Until next time, live infinitely. This presentation is for educational and informational purposes only. The information being presented and considered does not consider your particular financial objectives or situation, and it does not make personalized recommendations. This material is not intended to replace the advice of a qualified tax and legal advisor or other qualified professionals, and you should not use the information in place of a customized consultation with a licensed professional regarding your specific personal financial objectives, situation, and needs. We believe the information provided is reliable, but we do not guarantee its accuracy, timeliness, or completeness.